I'm Ben. And I'm Stefan. And I'm Ben. And welcome to Animating in Threes.
So, as Michael adequately put it, I'm Ben.
I'm Stefan.
Animating in threes.
And he's Michael.
And we are
animating in threes.
We are an animation podcast where three guys talk about an animated film or series and discuss it in a detail. Don't know how much detail, but in detail.
In some
if
sort
history,
of detail.
History is any indication, very little.
But before we get into that, we are going to be talking about tunes we've tuned into from the last 2 weeks. So, do you mind if I go first?
No.
Okay. So, the first thing I watched... So, I watched three things. Well, I'm going to talk about three things. First thing is this Steven Universe film that came out. And I watched it. And it was pretty good. I showed Michael and Stefan one particular clip from it. It's circulating around YouTube. It's called Other Friends. And it's really good, the animation in it. Like, for the rest of the film, most of the characters actually... Like, they're animated... as in the show, which I was a bit disappointed in. But the new character they introduced is so animated, like very old style, like from the 20s and 30s. And it's really fun to watch.
Her popularity is exploding online. Like everyone loves her. And the second I saw her, I was like, yeah, this is, she's going to be loved because she has that kinetic energy and her weapon is so grand and just brilliant. And that scene you showed is really great action choreography. I don't know. I've never seen Steven Universe action choreography before. This is actually the first time I've seen it. And this was really, like, outstanding in terms of how cartoony and just fun it was, while also being quite threatening as she's an antagonist.
Well, this is, like, the only thing in the series that's like this.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So there's no others that... Because this had really cool foreshortening with how she would jump from... really close to really far.
No, she's easily the best animated thing in the whole entire canon.
That's a shame because Steven Universe has probably the most gorgeous color palette of anything ever.
Did you like the clip I showed you?
Yeah, I did actually.
It was the pink. the pink.
No sarcasm here.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it. I like musicals and things that aren't necessarily musicals. I always like that. So yeah, I enjoyed that. It was kind of this jazzy. It reminded me a little bit of Cuphead.
Yeah,
with kind very
of
much.
The strange kind of like rubber hose animation mixed with kind of a jazzy overture. I really liked it.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting that much rubber hose. Like, from the trailers, there was a little bit, but not that much. But yeah, it's...
I've no idea anything. I don't know anything about Steven Universe, but I enjoyed that clip.
The rest of the movie was really good too.
Most important thing, how was his neck?
Oh, yeah, Steven has a neck in this because he's 16 years old.
That is all that is important about this film. Like, respect to all the creators involved, but this is the most important thing.
All the designs for the characters are their best in this film, including Steven. Like, instead of being, like, just shoved into this tight t-shirt, he actually has a cool t-shirt and a cool
jacket.
He
has a badass looking jacket. It's bright pink and it looks awesome.
And I love Garnet's design as well with her glasses. It just looks so cool. And Pearl's design, like, kind of looking like an 80s rocker chick.
Can I just ask, is most of their designs now just, hey, we have budget, let's put a jacket on them?
Yeah.
Except for Spinel, who's just, hey, let's make her constantly bop up and down.
Yeah, that's another fun thing. Like, every time she walks, she's just bopping up and down.
Yeah, because that's
really
fun.
That's
a 1930s thing. That's really cool.
I also has started watching Star Wars Rebels now.
So this is where you've gone from almost cinematic grade Clone Wars to not so much, right?
Okay, it's not cinematic, but it's not as bad as the first few seasons of Clone Wars.
Okay.
It's better than that. It's based off Ralph McQuarrie's art style, of his concept art.
Oh, that's the Star Wars concept guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I recognize the name.
Yeah, so...
I'm proud of myself.
So the show is based off his style, and, like, they... Like, one of the characters is deliberately... looking like one of the concepts for Chewbacca.
Ah.
It's like purple and a bit less hairy. And yeah, it's definitely a lot more kiddie than, like, coming off the Clone Wars. It's definitely a lot more kiddie than that. But as the show goes on, it does get more mature, just like the Clone Wars. So looking forward to that. And I also watched a new series, which is talked about a little bit before called Undone. So it's a...
Oh, is that already out?
Yes. So it's a rotoscoped show, 8 episodes, 22 minutes each, and it's done, it's made by Kate Purdy and Raphael Bob Waxberg, who both work on BoJack Horseman. This is, but it's, instead of Netflix, it, this is an Amazon Prime series. Yeah, and it's like completely rotoscoped, and it is actually a lot like Waking Life.
What's this called again?
I'm Undone.
Remember that actually... one with the woman in the car that the trailer Ben showed us?
Oh, yes, yes, sorry, yeah. Yes.
Yeah, no, and actually the same company who worked on this worked on A Scanner Darkly.
Okay.
Is A Scanner Darkly the...
another Richard Linklater. Yeah.
Is that the one with Robert Downey Jr. in it?
Yeah, Robert Downey Jr. and Keanu Reeves.
Yeah, because I remember when we first... Because I hadn't seen... I'd only seen parts of Waking Life until we...
I thought that was the one with Robert Downey Jr. I thought it was the same one.
I was expecting Robert Downey Jr., but no,
I was kind of disappointed, but
I haven't seen anything from A Scanner Darkly, so...
No, actually, we should watch it one day.
It's apparently good. Yeah,
Undone is also pretty good.
We should have a Linklater month.
Stefan, what have you been watching?
We didn't start go with Michael.
No, we'll do him last.
You know.
You've still got to watch Rocco's Modern Life.
Yeah, I haven't finished it.
But you watched that clip of Steven Universe, so...
Yeah, that's my tunes, what I've tuned watch today, yes.
Okay, so Stefan.
Okay, I've mentioned it so many times these past 2 weeks, I can't even tell if I said it on the last podcast, but I finally watched Final Space.
You did not mention it last time.
Okay, so Final Space is great. I loved it more than I thought I would have, because its art style... is like people say, oh yeah, it's kind of simple, but it's not. It's so cinematic in how they do their lighting, how they do their compositions, and the action is just A grade. Like, I was not expecting to watch this, and I was not expecting a full on Guardians of the Galaxy tier space adventure. And yet, that's exactly what this gave, with almost more heart than Guardians of the Galaxy. Like, this had some really hard hitting moments.
My favorite part of Final Space is like, the unexpected moments of heart that it gives. Because, like, you just expect it to be this fun, goofy adventure. But then, when it just really gets into, like, what makes people run and tick. And it just... it's unexpected to the point where you just go, like, I am so amazed by this.
Yeah, it really hits you on all those levels. So, it's got fun animation, which you think, oh, this is great. It's got great set pieces, which you think, oh, that's fun. It's got the adventure, which is good. And then it hits you with... the characters that are really actually well done. It's like, wow, this, why does this have everything? It shouldn't have everything.
My favorite joke from Final Space Season 1 is, so at the start, you find out why Gary was in prison, or why was he was a prisoner, which is he knocked out a guy, and then he left him in a toilet and stole his uniform, and then he accidentally blew up a whole lot of spaceships. You go back there 5 years later, turns out he's still knocked out in that toilet, all drugged up.
No one's helped him.
For 5 years. And, like, the fact that they paid that off at in the penultimate episode, I just loved that.
Yeah, it's really clever with... it's not crude humor. Like, it does do some crude humor, but a lot of the other humor is just quite clever and just kind of niche. The other thing that I watch, which I adore to pieces, is the Netflix original Carol and Tuesday.
So it's an anime, isn't it?
It's an anime original done by Studio Bones. Studio Bones is known for doing really balls-to-the-walls insane action sequences. Yet this is the exact opposite, where it's about two women in this, like, sci-fi future, and they write music together. That's all it is. It is so good. Like, it's got everything I love, and it just keeps hitting everything I love. It's like, no.
Does it have Gundam in it?
No, it doesn't have Gundam in it. But it got to the stage where at episode 4, I had to drop it because I was like, no, this is too good. I don't want to see it anymore. It's like, it was too much of just, it's nice. It's got this warmth to it. It's got great characters. The animation is beautiful. And it's just a lovely, lovely story from what I've seen so far.
So if we didn't get suggested to do Mobile Suit Gundam Unicorn last week, would you have picked that?
I would have picked this. It's also done by the same director who did Cowboy Bebop, which is one of my favourite things ever. So it's really got a lot going for it, and I hope a lot of other people do watch it, because it is really worth it.
Yeah, watch this Netflix show.
Yeah, Netflix is great. Great Netflix.
Anyway, The Dark Knight Returns is the 15th film in the DC Universe animated original movie series, which I feel like is a misleading title because a lot of those films are just canonically unrelated.
Yeah, I thought a lot of them were just its own thing.
Yeah, yeah. I feel like I think I'd get into it more if they were the same universe. I think that would be more interesting.
Actually, I like standalones. Like, the Joker movie.
I love standalones too, but I'm a continuity freak. Like, yeah, I
agree.
Eat and breathe that
But then
stuff.
Again, the original comics... I'm sure you get into this, but the original comics were as part of its own thing that was disconnected. I know it's part of
the Dark
original.
Knight Returns is an else... Well, start off as an Elseworlds story, and since Frank Miller has written several other books that take place within that universe, so now the Dark Knight Returns universe is in and of itself a little continuity.
But I'm sure you'll get into that more.
I'll get into that more. So, it's an adaptation of the 1986 comic book, The Dark Knight Returns, written by the aforementioned Frank Miller. And the film was initially released in two parts, so it's unusually long for an animated film. So, the film was directed by Jay Oliva and written by Bob Goodman. It was produced by Warner Premiere, DC Entertainment, and Warner Brothers Animation, and was distributed by Warner Home Video.
That's a lot of Warner.
I can't actually find any information on the animation software that Warner Animation... A lot of use of the word animation in there. I can't find any information about that software. Is it all Toon Boom?
It looks Toon Boom.
It looks like Toon Boom? Okay, we'll get more into Toon Boom later.
I
couldn't find anything.
Like, it looks streamlined enough to be a derivative of Toon Boom or that sort of thing. It's nothing experimental or that isn't TV grade. Like, it's not... It doesn't look cinematic grade.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, some stuff 2D. Is quite smooth and like, quite nice
definitely,
and fluid.
But...
I'd never... This animation style never really resonated with me.
To me, it just looks like stock standard superhero
animation. Yeah, yeah. That's the problem. I think something like this with so much kind of gravitas and, you know, thematic heft,
can be a bit derivative.
Yeah, I feel like they should have gone with something else. But for what we got, I think it's a genuinely good adaptation.
Yeah, they
adaptation.
Should have done another Batman Ninja with this.
I haven't seen that. We should do that one day.
It is so bizarre.
Anyway, it had an estimated budget of $3.5 million. And part one and two combined made a $9.6 million box office take.
So it made about 1.5 times its budget altogether.
So that's pretty good. So part one runs for... Like, each part runs for about 76 minutes. And there's a combined deluxe edition, which is available for purchase. And by available for purchase, I mean you can buy one at an incredibly inflated price on eBay. Because there were, like, limited steelbook releases or something. And that runs about 148 minutes. So it's a lot... It is basically an epic. It's a long film.
Mm.
The film stars Peter Weller as... an really interesting take on... Bruce Wayne. I wouldn't like initially when if you told me, you know, who would you cast as Bruce Wayne in The Dark Knight Returns or even Bruce Wayne in general, I wouldn't pick Peter Weller. Yeah, so apart from Peter Weller, the film also stars Ariel Winter as Robin, but it also stars, and I really like this performance, David Selby as Commissioner Gordon. Because he sounded so frail. He was just so completely done with his position. Like, if you think of the history of this character and what he's been through, he'd sound like an old, like, this frail, old, tired man.
Well, he's actually 70. So.
Yeah.
He was one of the best written characters in this movie, I thought.
So, yeah, the film was fairly well received. So, part one has a Rotten Tomato score of 100%.
Oh. What the world?
Based on only 5 critics' reviews.
Okay.
And part two has a 94% from 3 critics.
Okay.
But the general consensus is that the film is a strong adaptation, but at the same time, probably not, you know...
Groundbreaking.
A groundbreaking, extravagant event like, you know, pretty much the comic was. The comic revolutionised how the mainstream media saw Batman. It kind of changed his entire ethos. So here comes, like, Frank Miller, and his Dark Knight Returns, you know, comes from... You know, Frank Miller was living in New York at the time. So really, like, derelict 1980s, crime-ridden, dirty, garbage strike New York.
Don't you mean Gotham?
Yep. No. And you can see that obviously this is a decade removed, but like the Taxi Driver era in New York when it's just absolutely filthy and crime ridden. This book is really kind of heavily inspired by obviously a man who's living in a neighborhood, who's living in an area that has completely been enveloped by criminality. So the book explores the themes of like draconian vigilantism, you know, almost fetishized fascism, nuclear paranoia, anti-authoritarianism, social unrest, and Reagan-era idealist conservatism. which we'll talk about a little bit, because we had a whole, I remember, Stefan, we had a whole film class about that, about that mid-century, I'm not sorry, the 1980s return to American social conservatism and the and how a lot of media reflected that shift.
I wrote an essay paper on that, comparing it to Fury Road.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Fantastic. But you also said... exactly what we're talking about.
You also said fetishized fascism. Which, I can't fascism, help to think about... Bruno. You know,
yeah, yeah, which I love it because it's literally fetishized fascism. It's fantastic. It's so on the nose, but it's brilliant.
Anyway, yeah, we'll get into that later.
Yeah, and then there's also kind of like, you know, themes of the Red Scare, reflection of New York in the 1980s, patriotism and, you know, social revolution.
Does one of the themes include Batman on a horse? Is that a theme?
I have a little bit about that, actually.
That's not a theme. No. It's more of a visualization.
I had to pause the video because I was looking at it, and I was looking at a man dressed as a bat riding a horse with other little men with cyclops helmets with Batman masks on their heads looking up at him, and they were saying, "Let's go save the world." I was like, "What the hell is this?"
No, that's what I love. I love the theatricality because while comic books... can, like, I'm a proponent of comic books and of the superhero genre. While they can be used as a force for, like, really deep kind of social exploration, you know, really delving into, you know, the broader cultural zeitgeist and looking at quite complex themes, whether they be politically or socially, they're still comic books, and you can still have weird, stupid shit all the time. I love how Watchmen is this perfect distillation of nuclear paranoia and this... almost takedown of American idealism, but they can still have a really dumb giant alien squid at the end. It's fantastic.
Dumb alien squid.
The whole thing is really, it really encapsulates that mid-1980s dark, borderline fascistic power fantasy. So we talked about, obviously in the 1980s, Ronald Reagan was elected president, basically.
In America. Hard-bodied American.
Hard-bodied American. Yeah, we talked about this. If you do, like, Film Studies 101, the most, like, if you do the most basic film course, you would have learned about, you know...
Which is what we did.
Especially, like, political influence of cinema throughout the decades.
And 80s the 1980s, is where you got your commandos, your Rambos, all them.
Yeah, well, we talk about, like, what was it? Hard-bodied cinema. Like, Ronald Reagan was a Republican, elected president in the 1980s, and he represented a very specific American ideal. He was an actor. He starred in very kind of culturally romantic...
cowboy.
Westerns back in the 1950s. And he represents that post-war American romantic idealism of just...
white picket fence.
Yeah, like white picket fence, nuclear family, but also a celebration of, like, he kind of engendered a celebration of masculinity.
And being strong, really muscular, almost to the point of, like, reasonably,
like, I hesitate to use, like, the word archaic, but they're very kind of... old school values.
Yeah.
Whether now we're a little bit more, I think we're culturally, we're a little bit more about, like, gender fluidity and how gender is a very kind of loose term. Like, there shouldn't really be a tonality associated with sexes, because you just be what you want to be, basically. Mm. Yeah. So that Reagan era romanticism and really kind of, it kind of culturally combines with this, it's called in the book anyway, it's culturally kind of combined with this rise of crime and criminality in New York, and you kind of get those power fantasy violent characters.
Yeah.
So this is like your era that kind of gets stuff like Death Wish, starring like Charles Bronson. You got Dirty Harry, or like even characters like the Punisher kind of came into their own in this era. It's just basically, yeah, almost fascistic power fantasies. It's just getting back at crime in the most
violent,
aggressive, but simultaneously effective and efficient way imaginable, which is going into the street and shooting the less fortunate in the face.
So much fun.
So yeah, you can, like, it's interesting in that sense, and that's pretty much, like, really the sensibility that created this version of Batman. It's just someone who is so just angry and fed up, and you can really feel that in the film when he's watching TV and he's seeing all this crime, and he's just completely overwhelmed with, like, the how far Gotham has fallen, even though arguably it was, you know, just always just as
terrible
bad.
Why does anyone live in Gotham, by the way?
I always presume that it's really cheap rent.
You know what, probably
it's like how in the Marvel universe no one should live in New York. What an awful place to live. But at the same time, I think maybe in those universes rent is so low that it just attracts people who are probably a little bit more desperate.
Yeah.
More willing to commit crime. So that's why Gotham is just in this perpetual state of anarchy all the time. And if the Reagan era social conservatism influence wasn't obvious enough, Ronald Reagan is literally the president in Dark Knight Returns.
And is super old and looks like a zombie.
It takes place in this kind of atemporal reality that is obviously heavily inspired by 1980s counterculture.
In this animated thing, is that meant to be Ronald Reagan?
It's never explicitly stated, but it's obviously inspired.
It sounds and looks like him, but I couldn't say that it is him in it.
Frank Miller explains in an interview that I read online, kind of what drove the tone of the overall project. And he's talked about living in New York in the 1980s, and he says, "I got mugged. I'd always wanted to visit Batman and see what I could bring to him. But living in Manhattan and getting mugged once or twice gave me a much better view of the character. It made me, at least for a little while, as angry as he was."
Isn't he known for being an angry, grumpy person?
Frank Miller?
Yeah.
Am I thinking
of the other one?
Alan Moore, I think, that's maybe, is the one that's always grumpy. Frank Miller. But right now, if you watch some interviews with him, he's incredibly well-spoken and polite. So he seems like a nice dude.
No, I think it was Alan Moore I was thinking of.
Alan Moore is just kind of a grumpy old man. Mm-hmm. But he is also responsible for just, I guess, the best graphic novels ever written. So what? he can behave how he wants.
It's like the whole
He can wear his rings thing. And talk about the fifth dimension or whatever.
The fifth dimension.
Yeah, so you can really see, and you can feel that anger. You can feel that absolute, like very pointed and directed, like, fury towards criminals. You can just feel how angry, especially when you read the book, you can just feel like, it almost is a power fantasy. It's just Batman absolutely, he's completely effective in fighting crime, because basically whatever authoritarian power has tried to, you know, squash this mutant gang force has been completely ineffective and basically impotent, and it takes someone who has absolutely no regard for authority or, you know, proper procedure coming in and being as ruthless and effective and as efficient as possible. And you can really feel that. It's like, yes, this was written by a guy who definitely hates criminals on a level that you can tell is completely personal. So there was an observation by a comic book writer named Grant Morrison. Not sure if you've ever heard of him.
I have heard of him.
Yeah, he's very much he's very much the antithesis of Frank Miller, in the sense that he subscribes that very kind of deified, mythic, ultimate positivity status of superheroes.
Yeah.
He loves that. He loves the camp, basically. But he obviously is a huge fan of, he enjoys The Dark Knight Returns, and he made the observation on a podcast with Kevin Smith, which I really recommend. It's about 6 hours long, but the way Grant Morrison speaks is just completely, like, captivating.
Should we do a 6-hour podcast?
He's off the wall insane. Like, he's completely bonkers. He talks about how he saw Christ in the Paul or whatever.
What?
But the way he speaks, I think he just has, like, this cadence that's almost lyrical. Like, he's a Scottish guy. He's got this beautiful accent. And he speaks with so much passion. You know, he speaks with so much passion on, you know, superheroes, that it's just completely captivating, and you're completely drawn into his mindset and his world. And even though he's talking about seeing ghosts and how his house is haunted, you go, you know what? It probably is. I believe you, Grant Morrison. I believe that your light bulb's haunted or something.
Your light bulb is haunted.
I really recommend that podcast with Kevin Smith as well. Like, it's fantastic.
Fat Man on Batman.
Yeah. Grant Morrison was on the podcast 2 or 3 times, and this big supercut of every time he was on it on YouTube.
Okay. I thought you meant it was a 6-hour podcast. No, it was 3 podcasts.
No, but I've listened to the supercut in one go. It's really good. Anyway, okay. I really enjoy it. But he made the observation that you can kind of see the breakdown of Batman's morality throughout the film, because it's reflected by his costume changes, if anyone noticed that. Because he starts in the Neil Adams outfit. He starts with the blue cowl and, like, the yellow insignia and the grey outfit. And as the film progresses, and as his kind of tactics get a little bit more rough and a little bit more draconian,
he gets into his emo phase.
He starts to wear the black suit. And by the end of it, he's become Death. He's become the Knight. He just comes in on a dark horse.
So, I did not know that. Phase. That's cool.
Yeah. So you see this complete, like, it's not meant to be like a crux of his character arc or anything, but just a visual reflection of his changing tactics and how he really has to adapt to the times. And adapt to this new violent world. Because, you know, again, Manhattan in the 1980s, like, it was such a far cry from, you know, coming off of that mid-century kind of American patriotism. And it's come to basically this kind of low point in America's kind of social trajectory.
Mm.
Where, like, I think in Frank Miller's mind, kind of ruminating on how kind of far culture has fallen. And again, yeah, Batman starts as this light figure, like a representative of kind of a more innocent period. And by the end of it, he's
punching Superman.
Death. Yeah, he's punching Superman. He's wearing an enormous, like,
mech suit.
Like, sterile mechanical armor, and he's riding a horse into battle. Like, it's
there's another part great. I want to talk about later that reflects that idea.
What did you guys think of The Dark Knight Returns Part 1 and 2?
I think Bruce Wayne is a dick.
He's always been an asshole.
I know, but
it's
like,
his whole thing. Did you just notice?
Just, like, especially in this one, I feel, just from the Batman stuff that I've consumed personally, not what you, because you've obviously read a lot of the comics and stuff.
Yeah.
All the Batman stuff I've consumed is the Nolan trilogy, the Burton and Schumacher quadrilogy, and the Arkham games. That's pretty much it for me. And the Lego Batman games.
To be fair, I love Batman, and I read a lot of comic books, as you will both attest. My favorite interpretation of the Batman canon is the Arkham games.
Mm. I think they're great.
I like the tone of those the most. I think that's the perfect... anyway, like my preferential mix of darkness and goofiness. I think they get it quite nicely.
Because those games don't really delve into Bruce Wayne himself.
They do a little bit, but it's all surface level stuff. Like he's sad that his parents are dead, which is you would be.
But like with this, he's like really grim, and like it's understandable because he's retired from being Batman for 10 years.
We didn't say what the film's about.
Okay, what is the film about? Just do it as one thing.
Yeah, okay, just really quickly. So it's basically an Elseworlds kind of future story. It's basically been 10 years since Batman's last public appearance. So Bruce Wayne's been retired.
He's done a lot of private parties, though. It's fine.
Yeah, he's done all the private. He's grown a mustache.
He wrecked a car.
He's driving race cars. He's having fun as an old, grumpy old man.
55? He's not that old.
He's not that old, even though he looks 70.
Yeah. He looks the same age as Commissioner Gordon. Anyway.
Batman's retired. It's been 10 years. He's retired following the death of Jason Todd in this universe. So this is a universe where obviously those famous story arcs like Under the Red Hood and stuff like that never happened. So Jason Todd is killed in mysterious... We never really find out the details.
He tripped over a fish.
He tripped over a Gundam in the park.
And was impaled on another fish.
How do you impale yourself on a fish?
Out of all the museums to trip in, why did it have to be the Museum of Swordfish?
What a terrible place to verse the Penguin.
Was that Simpsons thing? Like, that museum's been nothing but trouble ever since it opened. So he basically comes back out of retirement to face Gotham's new threat, the Mutants, which is basically a stand-in for... You're going to make a joke about Cyclops, I'll get to it.
I made it in the chat last night, or whenever I watched it. Why did they just get Cyclops from Marvel's X-Men and just make... Just a base clone of him for all of the army.
I thought it was just a bite at Cyclops.
Because I think Cyclops would have an ideological issue with murdering women a lot.
And also...
Like, that's all that gang... The gang doesn't do anything. The gang doesn't have a source of income.
All they talk about is stabbing.
They just love to stab.
I hate their dialogue because all they say is
slice and dice.
by the way, stupid. It's bizarre because that dialogue is lifted again verbatim from the book. That dialogue might be really dated, but I'm not sure that in The Dark Knight 3, The Master Race, the way that gang members speak is more influenced by like text-to-speak.
Okay.
So like texting, internet slang, that kind of thing. Which you could argue will date just as poorly.
Lol, really, illy.
It's kind of like that stuff, but...
That's the first time I've ever said LOL, by the way,
properly. It reminds me, the way...
It's kind of weird, actually.
I know.
Yeah, so...
Okay, anyway, back to the plot.
Yeah, Batman comes out of retirement to face the new mutant threat terrorizing Gotham.
The New Mutants, the film that's gonna never come out.
Yes, that film, Ben.
Okay, I need to stop. Okay. I hate this mutant thing.
It is confusing because they do look like Cyclops and they're called the Mutants. Anyway, that's basically the plot. It's just Batman coming out of retirement to...
You have to say the whole thing.
That's it.
No.
We'll get through it.
Okay, no, I'm going to do the plot.
I don't want to go over because the recap goes for so long.
Not really.
I can do the recap.
You do the recap, Stefan.
Why can't I? Whatever.
Because you want to do
it
seriously.
You can both do the recap at the same time.
Okay, so Batman comes out of retirement, he punches some guys, and then this big guy goes, oh no, I'm gonna kill you.
And he nearly does.
And he's like, oh no, I'm gonna be smarter. So he punches that leader, and he punches him in mud, and then the New Mutants are like, oh, I guess we're sons of Batman now.
But then the Joker hears about this, and the Joker goes, hey, look, I'm not going to act sane anymore.
Because
Batman's on the news, so let's get
insane.
That's
a little bit different from the book. In the book, Joker is catatonic.
It looked like it was at the beginning of the first one. Yeah. But in the second one, it doesn't seem like
it was.
No,
he's kind of up. He's kind of up and moving a little bit.
So then you have the Joker causing chaos and killing people in crowds. And then you have the sons of Batman also causing more havoc. And then the power goes out because Superman
war happening in the background.
And Superman tried to...
Just in case it wasn't 1980s enough for you, the Soviet Union still exists.
And the bomb somehow caused an EMP to cause all of Gotham's power to go out, which means that people could escape from the jail cells. And then there's people fighting people and Batman going, I'm on a horse, let's do this thing, but no guns because they kill my parents.
No guns, just stab everyone you see! Actually, that was the one poor voice performance, I think, in the entire thing. I don't think there was a strong enough presence when he was giving his big motivational talk.
No, there wasn't.
But then the president got angry because Batman was becoming more of an authority leader. So then he sent Superman to go, I need to teach you a lesson.
Superman's been basically brought under the remit of the government. It's fantastic. And you kind of hear what happened to the rest of the Justice League as well.
And then...
Batman beats Superman.
But Superman also beats Batman... But it turns out Batman's still alive at the end.
And he has his new stabby slice of dice of people, and now the sons of Batman, and they're going to learn how to be Batmans.
Also, they introduced female Robin
Carrie Kelly. Yeah, Carrie
Kelly.
She's awesome. She's
cool. I really liked her. Anyway, that is the plot. Sorry, that was so bad, but Michael couldn't be bothered doing it, so Stefan and I had to step in.
No, I'd rather spend an hour talking about Reaganomics or whatever.
Reaganomics?
Okay. Yeah.
Opening thoughts.
Did you give yours?
Yeah, so apart from Batman being a bit of a dick, you're going to have to censor those two words out.
That's fine.
Anyway, apart from that, I quite enjoyed it. Yeah, it was a really fun sport. I've never read the comic, so watching the film like this, and now hearing that it is a faithful adaptation, I quite liked it. And again, like, there have been a lot of these themes iterated throughout other Batman things that I've watched, and... Yeah, and a lot of just different media, but like seeing where all that comes from is really cool.
Mm.
I think the problem for me with these particular, how DC does their animated things, is that they wonderfully do them faithfully, they do them too faithfully, and don't experiment as much. In that the visuals are really nice, streamlined, slick animation, cool, but they never do anything too... interesting. Like, the most interesting animation parts I remember in this was when it showed Batman, he's stripped off his clothes when he's bleeding half to death to see, I don't know, the mantle of the bat eat his head off. I don't know, it was something weird. That scene was all silhouette, and that was great. I was like, yeah, bring it back to that Art Deco noir. That looks really cool. But that was the only scene in the film that did that.
Mm.
Like, I feel like if they did this grand scene with Batman riding his horse, they could have made him look like a Reaper. They could have done things that really emphasize that he is this embodiment of death.
So basically you want more symbolism.
Yeah, I reckon, visual-wise, it could have experimented more because it was a very great, faithful adaptation, but it kind of fell short in that it just wasn't visually interesting. It didn't visually tell this really complex and really intriguing story that goes from a lone man fighting fighting all these masses and all these criminals to like a all-in extravaganza where you got the Joker, you got Superman, you got all these big heroes, but they're older. And it's really interesting to see that, but I think it could have been told a bit better animation-wise.
Again, just the stock standard DC animation stuff.
Which I don't mind, it does work.
See, I usually hate it. I don't know. I think what they're like the stories they're adapting have this quite grand mythic status to them, and I don't think this animation is particularly good at conveying that weight. A lot of the backgrounds are very sterile, especially in the Superman fight, which is like the big climactic finale. It's just in like a snowy street with no details.
Mm.
Actually, that fight did kind of remind me of The Dark Knight Rises.
The Dark Knight Rises takes a lot of influence from The Dark Knight Returns as well.
I saw that too.
In the sense that Batman comes back to basically face against a complete civil breakdown of, you know, Gotham.
But that being said, both parts did flow. Like, it was a really long film in both parts, but it flowed quite well. And the second part, I don't usually laugh at horrible things happening, But the Joker was so Joker in the second part. I laughed at how no one could stop him. Just he was just one person with no powers and he was unstoppable somehow.
I thought the Joker sounded a bit too American.
I didn't like his voice. I have to have Mark Hamill as the Joker.
Yeah, exactly. Like I played through the Arkham games for the first time last year.
It was
and the Mark Hamill in that.
Yeah. He dominates. So phenomenal.
Yeah, and just hearing a different take on the Joker. Like, it was still good, but I think the voice just wasn't... It didn't have that edge to it.
And I think...
That the Joker needs.
It's not just him. A lot of the other characters in this felt like the voices... Besides Commissioner Gordon. Commissioner Gordon, for me, was 100%.
I also really liked Robin
Because Commissioner
as well.
Gordon's a bit more, like, fluid. You can, like, I'm...
You can have a J.K. Simmons. You can have...
But yeah, because he's not that iconic, or really there's no one role that really defines that character. Or at least not one performance that defined that character. You can kind of, you can be a bit more loose with how you cast Commissioner Gordon. But no, you've got, in the case with Mark Hamill, you've got a performance that pretty much everybody, or at least people who are kind of really into the comic book or side of things.
Likened to with the Joker.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not a huge fan of Kevin Conroy, which is like sacrilege.
Who's Kevin Conroy?
He's the guy that always voices Batman.
In the animated series and the Arkham games.
Yeah.
I do like his voice.
No, he's a good voice, but I think that there's just no... He's just got kind of one tone throughout everything he says. And I think that's kind of a problem. Because I think especially at the end of Arkham Knight... this is spoilers for Arkham Knight, but that... I've talked about this before. The big climactic point of Arkham Knight is Joker... Is Batman basically... he has this final fight with Joker inside his own mind, and he has to lock Joker away in his memory because he takes away that power because the Joker wants to be remembered. And he does his big kind of epic proclamation from the animated series when he says, "I am vengeance, I am the night, I am Batman." And he's meant to like, it's meant to be like the emotional.
I am Batman.
He's meant to like yell at
not like that.
Maybe not that.
No, so you sounded sick.
Yeah,
I was sick last.
Do you want
week,
a cough lozenge?
Yeah, you want a lozenge? You want a Strepsil?
It's stressful.
Yeah, no, he's meant to proclaim this big, "I'm vengeance, I'm the night, I'm Batman." And he kind of flubs the line, I think. I think it's incredibly...
It's not as powerful.
It's very flat and stilted delivery. And Kevin Conroy is not that old.
No. What did you... So what were your opening thoughts on this?
I enjoyed it. I like the Dark Knight Returns, the comic book, but I'm not the biggest fan of it. It's the same thing when I think I read it too late, and but the comic book anyway, I just think that we live in a pop culture era that's so heavily influenced by it that reading it now
seems redundant
when surrounded by this kind of thing kind of lessens its impact. If I had read this in 1986 when you mentioned Batman and people just think about Adam West,
this would have been hard.
This would have been amazing. But I read it in an era when like the Christopher Nolan films happened.
Yeah.
So that's what I think of the book anyway. I think overall it's great and it's very kind of thematically complex, and I think it's got some excellent ruminations about particularly like 1980s, we talked about social conservatism and how that influences media. The film, I suppose, is it like it's as good as a basically one-to-one adaptation can be.
Yeah.
Like all of its strengths are the strengths of the book. There's nothing overtly wrong with it. I think a couple of the news segment bits don't quite translate well into cinema, because when they're depicted in the book anyway, all the news segments are basically over flashed on one page or like across a spread.
Whereas this, they couldn't do
so
that.
So really, you got to like cut next to it. Because at least, because books in a sense are partially non-linear in the sense that you can take in a whole scene at once. So you can look at this spread of TV screens and you can really be overwhelmed by information. You can give...
But you can get like little panels and you don't have to read all of them.
You don't have to read all of them. You have to read them in order. And you can really allow yourself to be kind of positively overwhelmed by that amount of kind of media coverage about all these atrocities. But in this one, you just got to show it in a linear fashion.
It's one
after
time.
The other. And it doesn't quite work as well. And then also in the sense that, again, we talked about before, that because it's a straight adaptation, it exists in an era where everything was influenced by The Dark Knight Returns, so it can't possibly be that hard-hitting or that influential in and of itself.
Do you think it was worth doing a film adaptation of it?
It's just in the sense that it's like, why do you bother doing an adaptation of The Killing Joke as well? Because The Killing Joke is an issue long. It's just people want to see it in motion. People want to see it acted out, I suppose.
And we get to talk about it on this podcast.
And we get to talk about it on the podcast.
But with both this and The Killing Joke, my main thing would be experiment more visually because the story is great.
Like, yeah, yeah. For some reason, like I know they don't make money, And that's a problem in terms of allocating a budget towards them. Well, at least they don't make much money on, you know, not on the scale of obviously the big blockbuster films. So I guess that is a limitation in terms of how many animation resources they can pump into it. Yeah, but at the same time, I think the sort of source material like this that you want people to take seriously, I think it deserves better, if that makes sense. Because they are really interesting stories that I think the broader public could really get behind. Because while they are incredibly influential in the comic book landscape, no one's heard of them in terms of the mainstream. Like you'd be hard pressed to find people who know about like The Killing Joke, or The Dark Knight Returns, or like.
But that's the thing. In order to convey it,
Batman Year One. Like even though like people like my family will maybe love Batman Begins, which is takes a lot of elements of Year One, they would have never heard of Batman Year One, despite being probably the most popular pieces of Batman related literature. Yeah, so I feel like they if you want to, you know, push these into the mainstream, give them a little bit more emotional weight. I don't think the animation style that they end up going with for every one of these films is the right one to go with, even though it's one that they basically have to choose out of necessity, because, again, animation is incredibly expensive and difficult. In terms of it as an adaptation, again, it's nice just to see it acted out, to hear it voice acted, to see it in motion. But at the same time, it's satirizing a cultural climate that's long gone, basically. Yeah. And if you're going to adapt it, I suppose in the modern day, I guess you'd adapt it in a way that either satirized, what would it have been, the Obama administration at that point. So you'd satirize whatever was kind of plaguing the social climate then.
So it'd probably be satirize, so easy to do it nowadays.
Yeah. So you'd easy. Probably do something. You'd probably say something about kind of institutionalized racism or something like that. The 1980s, like nuclear paranoia, like punk aesthetic, criminal ridden like Metropolis is so core to the aesthetic and ethos and tone of The Dark Knight Returns that if you're going to adapt it now but adapt it with kind of in a new social climate, you kind of take away what makes that book, what made that book unique.
Yeah,
because it's so, that's the 1980s is so core to the overall story that adapting it for the modern day would basically be to remove the core ethos of the entire story. So I guess maybe you could do a loose adaptation, but again, a loose adaptation is just kind of The Dark Knight Rises and all this stuff, or Batman versus Superman. So, your mileage may vary depending on what you're looking for, but as a straight adaptation, it's just fun to see it acted out, and I enjoyed it.
So Carrie Kelly, I've never seen Carrie Kelly in anything.
I didn't even
before.
Know she existed.
Oh, didn't you? Because I've always, well, for the past few years, I've known there was a female Robin, and I've only seen like images. So as soon as I saw her, I recognized who it was. And I guess that is a good thing that she is recognizable. Mm. Yeah, not like, especially with her glasses that wrap around her head, which I thought was a cool detail.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought like introducing her into this world was really cool. Although, again, like, I know this is a problem with Batman, like, a lot of people have addressed it. Like, why would he get this 13-year-old girl to help him with all these dangerous things?
Because she reminds him of like the ideal from like that bygone era.
And that's why she joins as well. Because
her costume is also completely kind of uninhibited or completely unreflective of kind of the darkness that's enveloped Gotham now. Her costume is a complete one-to-one throwback to the colourful romanticism of the 1960s. Mm. And Batman straight away just embraces that, like, without question.
Mm.
Yeah.
But yeah, I really liked her character. Again, the fetishized fascism character of Bruno. I was completely thrown off by that. I was like, what the hell
That's
is this?
That's also straight from the book.
She was massive...
Like, the swastika's over the nipples. Yeah. Like, it's straight from
a
the
massive
book.
Butch woman, and just... It was so fun. It doesn't have any... anything. It doesn't add anything to the plot, really, apart from just the thematics behind it.
I would have loved to be in the room while you two watched that, because, like, it's insane.
What else did I like? I liked... the beginning where he, like, is first Batman again, and he's, like, brutalizing all these people.
Yeah.
I wasn't expecting... I thought he would... Like, he wouldn't be punching them and all that and just be apprehending them.
No, it's incredibly violent.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting...
He's a very aggressive old man.
Mm.
What did you like, Stefan?
Okay, well, the first major thing I loved, how when he comes back as the Batman, it does that iconic silhouette shot of
him. The pose doesn't really make sense. Yeah. Like, what's he doing? Why is he pointing?
It doesn't matter, but the second you see that, you know exactly what pose that's referring to, and the cop just goes, yep, stand back, this is his show.
For those who don't know, that's the cover of the...
It's the cover of the graphic novel, yeah. Well, at least one of the issues.
And I think that, again, the parts where it changes its animation to do something different is enticing. Like, I remember that scene exactly what it looks like, because it's interesting.
Yeah.
Mm.
And I think if it did more of that, that would be great.
I do love how that the older cop is completely, is like, completely accepts Batman's presence and is willing to help him, and the younger guy is completely distrustful, like, right off the bat.
Which is also reflective of the relationship between Commissioner Gordon and the new, what's her name?
New cop.
Brilliant, yes. Fantastic. I don't remember.
I don't remember her name.
I actually thought it was bloody Carrie's mum, because
they look similar. Yeah.
She looks like the younger version of Commissioner Gordon from Batman Year One, which is kind of references as well. Batman Year One was also written by Frank Miller, if people don't know, and it details the
first year of Batman,
the incredibly obviously iconic origin of Batman, which was written, I think, in the very early 90s.
Can I ask what happened to Oracle in this universe? Why is Oracle not
Oracle exists? Well,
Oracle least, being Commissioner Gordon's daughter,
which is Batgirl, but then she gets her legs broken or something.
Yeah, so the whole Oracle, Barbara Gordon as Oracle thing, wasn't a thing back when Dark Knight Returns was written. But Barbara Gordon as a character, I'm fairly certain, does exist in this, at least in this animated universe, because you see a picture of her in Commissioner Gordon's home, along with Commissioner Gordon's son, who in the main comic book continuity becomes a serial killer.
Oh.
And there's a fantastic series of issues, or like a fantastic trade called
Oh No, My Son's Been Evil.
I think it's part
of the... Is that done by the same people who did Honey, I Shrunk the Kids?
Yes.
I think it's part of the Black Mirror story arc or something like
that. I'm pretty sure Black Mirror is also a TV series.
But
imagine if those two crossed over.
It's Commissioner Gordon dealing with the fact that his son is a psychopath.
How does he do that? Does he go, oh no, my son's a psychopath.
Well, this might be putting it lightly, but he's fairly unhappy about it.
Oh, I can imagine.
Just like most parents would be.
Yeah.
So it's just you're running the mill comic then.
Something.
It's incredibly violent. Like, it's insane.
Sorry, I wasn't just making light of the fact of that.
Yeah.
Something the animated film that I was laughing maniacally, and I didn't even find it funny. I was just laughing at how ridiculous it was. Was just how when the Joker goes on his killing spree in the carnival, he's just shooting
everybody.
Like, there's no plan to it anymore. It's completely anarchy.
He's just firing shots.
And for me, I don't know how it plays out in the comics. I wish it was done more experimentally, but I love how Batman kills him in the Tunnel of Love.
Yeah, I was going to mention, I knew you'd love that. It's the most on-the-nose symbolism, probably in the entire thing, except for, like, the literal fetishized fascism bit.
Yeah.
It's the most on-the-nose symbolism, but I love it. Batman kills Joker in the Tunnel of Love. It's fantastic. That's the final showdown.
Great. Like, if I didn't even know he killed Joker in this universe. Like, that, if there was any end to the Joker, I wish it was animated in a more experimental way, but that is to a Joker.
When the
Joker
is on fire and, like, you can see his skull
laughing.
Yeah,
he's still smiling.
That was a really great visual.
And Batman was like, stop laughing at me when he's trying to hit the smoke alarm. He's like, stop it. The humour, there was humour.
There is bits of where it's funny.
Do you know what I loved?
Is it the Never Live in the City part?
Which one?
Oh, it could go.
No, there's some really dark things with the presidents that I really love, where what the president says, oh, Batman is out of my hands, I don't deal with him. That's a matter for the state, goes to the state. Oh, Batman isn't part of me, that's a matter for the mayor. The mayor, oh, I don't want to deal with this, it's a matter for someone else. It's like, perfect. Didn't need any explanation.
I also like the bit when, like, Ronald Reagan's, like, he goes on nationally broadcast television, but he's just wearing a head-to-toe radiation suit. He's trying to keep everyone calm while wearing this, it's very funny.
And the part where there's this part where the mayor goes to address the mutant leader, and he's like, I will be better than Batman, I'm going to go with peaceful negotiations. Exactly what you think would happen.
And it's insane. They lock the door. Like, he doesn't get any supervision. That's the one bit where I was like, that
wouldn't happen.
That was such a weird decision to me, that it almost felt just like suicide.
Yeah.
Like, what did you think was going to happen? Not even just to leave
but
the door
But that's
why open.
I loved it, because the very next scene, it hard cuts to just the report saying, oh, looks like our mayor's dead now.
I didn't really like the fake out when you think Commissioner Gordon's been shot, and she's like, "Oh, I read that wrong." Do you remember?
Yeah, that was very obvious.
That was very obvious. Yeah, of course. Yeah, of course. Okay. But you guys hadn't seen. Did you guys know anything about it before? Presumably, you knew about the showdown, the climactic showdown, Ben.
Yeah, I knew there was the Batman versus Superman fight. I think that's it.
Yeah, I didn't.
You didn't? Yeah, I was interested when you were telling me, Stefan, because you texted me a bit while you were watching it, and you didn't know anything about it. Was there anything you were surprised at, like characters you were surprised showed up, like Superman?
Superman, it was funny, because throughout this entire thing, Ben said that Batman was a jerk and represented as a jerk.
Mm.
I was completely on board with everything he was saying. Like, but even Superman. When it was Superman versus Batman, I was like, Superman, you're basically on Ronald Reagan's leash.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
you're
exactly.
not the good person here. You're actually quite submissive, whereas Batman is fighting for freedom. And I love how...
Yeah, instead of solving the crux of the social problem, they'd rather go after the person who's embarrassing them because he's more effective.
Yeah, like, now Gotham, because it's under Batman's reign, is the only city in the world that, in America, that isn't... corrupt with violence and whatnot, and Ronald Reagan's character's first thing is, we need to take him down. It's like, you're the problem.
I'm not saying Superman is right in what he's doing. It's just, there's a lot of, like, grey morals happening within all the characters.
And the whole
super
thing is kind of a grey moral, because, like, the book itself seems like a little bit, it's more in favour of Batman's kind of, off the record kind of.
Obviously, because this is a story from Batman's point of view, so obviously it's going to be more towards
his favor.
Yeah, but
from his point of view doesn't mean you could be sympathetic towards that character.
Well, what about the Joker movie coming out?
Yeah, you shouldn't be sympathetic towards him. You're not meant to be sympathetic with, like, Travis Bickle or Rupert Bumpkin. They're character studies. But, yeah, at the same time, I feel like one issue would be that, obviously, Frank Miller is incredible. Like he said before, he's as angry as Batman was, so it's not as willing to critique Batman's methods as you might, that you probably should. You should critique what he does, because what he does is insane.
Yeah.
It would be completely ineffective.
It's like, that's the point of view of the new commissioner as well.
Yeah.
Like, he's not doing the right things in, like, due process of the law. We should take him down.
I think the Punisher is also kind of a really interesting argument. You read a lot of Punisher comics, and there's a lot of stuff about where the cops are really happy just to kind of let him do his thing. Because they might not agree with his moral philosophy, but at the same time he gets results, and also he's kind of this kind of social surrogate for everybody. Like, everyone experiences so much catharsis when he's around. There's an issue of the Punisher when the Punisher goes after it's called the Slavers. It's about sex trafficking. And, like, sex trafficking or human trafficking is one of the most absolutely abhorrent crimes you can be involved with.
Comics are so fun.
Aren't they fun? And Frank Castle basically goes after this sex trafficking ring, or this human trafficking ring. And one of the women he rescues, he says, like, I'm going to go back and kill the rest of them. And the woman says, like, why? Like, you're not fixing the crux of this problem. Like, if you go after them and kill them, there's going to be another ring. There's going to be more, like, gang members. It's just going to happen again. What you're doing is completely impotent and ineffective. Like, why do you keep doing it? And then he just looks at her and says, we'll both feel better if I do.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's it. It's just, at that point, it's just catharsis. And that's
Batman's doing.
It is a borderline fascistic power fantasy.
Do you know what? I also like how in this animated one, and I'm assuming because it's a faithful adaptation, the other one does it too, how the Joker, it kind of outlines this idea that the society tries to keep blaming Batman for his techniques. And yet they keep trying to emphasize with the villain saying that Joker has a distraught mind. Yeah. And yet he goes on the show saying, yeah, I'm going to kill all of you. And they're like, oh, no, he doesn't really mean that. And he's like, well, I do.
And then he smashes a mug and kills his doctor. That's defending.
It's a bit different in the book. But the key difference being that he goes on like a David Letterman surrogate instead of Conan O'Brien. Conan O'Brien does voice the talk show host, by the way.
Oh, that's cool. By the way, the Doctor, even though I didn't like him, he had a point. Because as soon as Batman was in the news, that reawakened the Joker.
Oh, definitely.
Which means that Batman is kind of creating his own villains.
But he kept supporting
the
Joker as well.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, yeah.
But I thought that was a really interesting, like, story beat where, Batman is kind of creating his own villain.
But it's kind of scary as well because, again, I'm going to go back to, like, Frank Miller is very angry at the world. Mm. And, like, he's kind of talking, it's kind of like it feels like anti-rehabilitation almost, which I think is kind of dangerous a little bit to say that, like, nobody is, a dangerous person like can't be reintegrated into society. It seems very much opposed to that idea. That being said, in the case of the Joker, I think it's fine.
Yeah,
because he's obviously a cartoon.
Yeah.
So it's okay to kind of make the statement about him.
He's like a mass murderer as well.
Oh yeah, he's killed like they give a direct figure
like over 600 people.
I find it really odd. I find it really stupid that the second Batman kills the Joker, he's immediately labeled a murderer. It's like, oh, he's a murderer. He killed the Joker. But
he mentions there that he's killed people before, so it's not the first time. Because he says something like, all the people I murdered and I let you live. And he goes, why?
Mm.
Yeah.
Oh.
That's obviously a good line as well.
Mm.
Like, why wouldn't you kill the Joker if he's going to keep killing people?
I remember in the Arkham series, they kind of infer this idea that they need one another. The Joker needs Batman, Batman needs
just
the Joker.
Just like in the Dark Knight as well.
I think with like, they're symbiotic, they justify each other's existence. But like, it's one of those things that I don't think you can go much deeper than that. It's been explored in basically every piece of Batman media.
Except Batman from Tim Burton.
Anyway, have you guys got anything else to say about Batman Returns?
I think we've got a lot of interesting things. Dark Knight Returns. Batman Get it, Returns. Right? We're
you
not talking about...
Batman, you got me thinking Batman Returns. You got anything to do with... Every one of us has to like mispronounce it at some point.
Yeah.
Stefan, what did you think of The Empire Strikes Back?
Well, I reckon it was good.
Should we close now?
Yeah, we should.
Closing thoughts. Stefan, what did you think of Batman The Dark Knight Returns?
Well, I liked how there was Batman and he rode a horse, and that is all I wanted to see.
I
like
how it was Batman and he came back. said everything it said on the tin happened.
No, we already said what our major thoughts are and problems are. I just think it could have been a lot better, but for what it was as an adaptation, it was good. It was fine.
Yeah,
it was good. I just liked seeing like where all the inspiration from this, where it came from.
Yeah.
And it was like, it's just a really interesting insight to the Batman character and the stories that he inspires.
Yeah. Again, like we mentioned before, in a landscape that, you know, filled with pop culture that's so heavily inspired by this adaptation couldn't possibly have the same cultural impact. But it is nice seeing something that's so iconic rendered in a completely different medium, even though it doesn't really make use of the benefits of that medium.
Mm.
But I enjoy it and I recommend it if you enjoy Batman and you enjoy, you know, the mythology and just kind of seeing him do his thing. Give it a watch. I think it's one of the better or more well-received DC animated films. We'll do another one of those sometime.
I thought these DC animated films are meant to be like really good.
It's one of the better ones, I'm saying. I didn't say they're all bad. There's other ones like Justice League Dark or...
Teen Titans versus the Justice League. That one's fun.
Teen Titans Go! The Movie.
Teen Titans Go! to the movies.
It Chapter 2.
Okay,
but thanks, guys. Thanks for letting me just yell a bit for a while.
So that's all of our talk about The Dark Knight Returns Part 1 and 2.
So, Ben, what are we doing next week?
We are doing a movie I have not watched in probably...
20 billion years.
15 years or so. It is from 1997, and it's based off a book. Not a comic book, but it's based off a book. Pippi Longstockings.
Oh, no!
It's free on YouTube. Someone's uploaded it onto YouTube. And
so that's why you picked it, because we could just watch it on YouTube.
Also because...
You have no fond memories of it.
I do have fond memories of it, and I want to go back to see if it is good. I remember specifically one scene where she's flipping pancakes and it stacks really tall.
Flipping pancakes is pretty good.
Stefan.
So that's what we're going to be doing next
What are we
week.
Watching the week after that?
You don't have to do
that. You don't have to do that.
Okay, bye.
I can't wait for flipping pancakes.
Wait, where can we find us, Ben?
So if you want to find us, you can find us at every second Friday.
Cut that!
I'm going to have to cut that real bad.
Okay, if you want to contact us, you can contact us at... animate3pod@gmail.com, where you can leave us, you know, just tell us if we've been doing well or bad, or if you want to just suggest something. And we are also on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and wherever podcasts are available except for Google Podcasts. And that is all. This is going to be a long one, sorry. And goodbye.
Well, by the time I'm done, I'm going to cut it down to what it normally is. So that's the same.
Two minutes.
The end.
You're right there, Ben. Yeah. You're doing the snake the entire time. For like 2 minutes now, you were just doing the snake with your head.
It was 10 seconds.
Are you also on drugs like Grant Morrison?
No, on acid like Spider-Man.
Ah! Spider-Man wasn't on acid. He caught a guy who jumped off a building because he thought he could fly because he was on acid.
Oh.
He was on an acid guy.
That's every anti-drug thing in like the 20th century, which is just like, don't do drugs because you'll think you can fly. Well, is that the only side effect of acid? I feel like people wouldn't take acid if all it made you do was think you could jump off a building.
I mean,
the 60s would just be hippies raining from the sky.
Maybe it was. That's where Raining Men came
You'd
from.
You'd have to mention it in, like, the meteorological forecast. It's like, I better take an umbrella because there's got to be a lot of hippies falling out of the sky.
Okay. Oh, no.
Okay, it's a summer of love. There'd be hippies everywhere.